The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast with Herb Street, Pollock, and Negandhi. Kevin Negandhi, your host here. And this is my favorite time of year. When we're talking April and the draft, and we can combine the best of both worlds, the players that we followed in college football and transitioning through the teams that we follow in the NFL. And looking forward to having our first guest back after a layoff, and that is Todd McShay joining us. And by the way, Todd's also on another podcast where he co-hosts. It's called The First Draft with Mel Kiper Jr. and Field Yates. We're going to have Mel later on this month, I think the week of the draft, to get his final thoughts as we lead into the first round coverage on ESPN, which is Thursday, April 29th on ESPN and ABC at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Also want to remind you that when it's April, that means it's a big week here. Baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. And before I introduce Todd, I also want to remind you guys that we took a break here in February and March, but we will be here every week with a new podcast leading up to the draft. So for the next 4 weeks, including today's podcast, we'll have something related to the draft, and we'll have analysts, we'll have prospects joining us, and as I mentioned, Mel Kiper Jr. In the meantime, enjoy Todd McShay's thoughts on the upcoming draft. And it is my pleasure to bring in one of the best. That is draft expert Todd McShay. I hate the titles that we have. You're just ESPN's draft expert, okay? When it comes to this stuff, Todd. And it's my favorite time of year because this is the buildup to the draft this entire month. You know, we go through all the workouts and the combine, a different type of year, of course. But now, literally, the next 3 weeks is kind of when the juices start to flow and you kind of wrap things up. I want to get your mindset right now. Where are things as we are less than 4 weeks away from the draft, as teams are starting to button things up and zero in, and now it feels like things have settled down when it comes to trading before the draft?
Yeah, I've got 390 players I just finished up. So I'm ready. And it's to the printer. They're going to print it. They're going to send us 20 copies that everyone can utilize. And that's my prep. And now it's on really, it's shifted from the player evaluations to what the teams need and kind of where teams are going to go and focusing on that and talking to a lot of guys in the league, head coaches, general managers, scouts that are friends of mine. That's kind of the focus and trying to figure out where that, as you mentioned, the next move is going to be. I think Carolina, sitting at 8, is the most quarterback-hungry team in the first round that has not moved or is not currently in the top 3 spots. And they're not going to be able to make a deal at number 4 with Atlanta because they're in the same division. So is it 5 with Cincinnati? Is it 6 with Detroit? What are they going to do to go get a quarterback? Because in talking to their coaching staff at the Senior Bowl, they coach one of the teams at the Senior Bowl, their focus was – we lost 8 games last year by 1 score. We need a guy that can lead that drive that you need in the fourth quarter. And I think that's kind of what they're determined to try to do is find the quarterback that can be that guy in the fourth quarter. Now, Trevor Lawrence is going to go number 1 from Clemson to Jacksonville. And I think at number 2, it's going to be Zach Wilson, whether it's the Jets. And I think that's most likely coming out of BYU or a team that trades up to the number 2 spot. And then at number 3, we know San Fran didn't move up to go get a guard, right?
No.
They're moving up to get to whether it's Mac Jones, which is what the intel is saying, the Alabama quarterback, or it could be Trey Lance from North Dakota State or Justin Fields from Ohio State. But they moved up from 12 to 3 to go get a quarterback. So we're going to see the first 3 picks, quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. And Atlanta could take a quarterback at 4, which would be record-setting. Or they could take Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida, but they're not going to make a move with Carolina. So Carolina is going to get up somewhere in that 5, 6, 7 range to try to go get the guy that they want after the first 3 quarterbacks come off the board.
And we know for sure the Bengals are not taking quarterback at five there, of course, because they have their future for forever. And then after that, the question is, what's Miami going to do at six? Do they get somebody to help Tua Tagovailoa, right? Big picture-wise, is this, do they build and give him an asset where he can throw down the field when it comes to weapons to Jamar Chase or hypothetically a guy like Kyle Pitts? Specifically here, when we look at these quarterbacks, it always felt like, last season, even the season before, when the draft was going to come around here for 2021, it was Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields. Todd, what has happened in the last 2 months with the Justin Fields conversation here from 1A to now potentially the third or fourth quarterback in the conversation? And that's not a knock on Justin Fields. That could be the conversation of Zach Wilson. I'm just saying, what has happened here in this kind of conversation shift?
Well, first of all, Zach Wilson from BYU had a phenomenal year. So that, I think he kind of overtook that number two spot because of the way he played. Now, if you want to make an argument against that, he didn't play great competition this year. It's not his fault. He played the schedule that he was, you know, that was handed to him. And you go back to 2019, he had the shoulder injury and the hand injury and didn't play great in some of the bigger games that they had. So you can make that argument. But what I see on tape is a guy that can extend plays, change his arm angles. He's got some, you know, everyone wants to say Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers. I hate to put that on a player. But he's got that kind of ability to extend and create after the initial play breaks down. So I think that makes it Lawrence 1, Wilson 2. Fields specifically, he might be the most physically gifted quarterback in this class, Kevin. He really might be. I mean, he's big, strong. He ran a 4.44 in his 40-yard dash at Ohio State's Pro Day. People were talking about his work ethic. I've never heard anything about his work ethic. The guy's a vegan so that he can keep his body in great shape. If you watch him with his shirt off running in that 4.44 40, I mean, he's absolutely ripped. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to play this past year. He could have opted out like a lot of other guys in the first round, like Jamar Chase or Penei Sewell, you know, Micah Parsons. All these other guys opted out. He was the one promoting coming back and playing and was desperate to play. And it might have hurt his draft stock, let's be honest. He didn't play great against Northwestern. He struggled against Indiana. He was injured in the Clemson game, in the semifinal game.
Yep.
And then in the final didn't play great, but he was battling injury. So you can't tell me that work ethic is the problem when it comes to Justin Fields. I mean, just watch him get his rib cracked and then playing out that game against Clemson, outplaying Trevor Lawrence, and then going into the national championship game a week later and battling, you know, and giving it all for four quarters. So I don't have an issue with the work ethic. What I do see on tape and what is matched up when you look at the analytics and the numbers, he struggles when it comes to getting from his first read to his second read. And he doesn't do it a whole lot on tape. Now, Trevor Lawrence, you could say he doesn't have a lot of anticipation throws in the middle of the field. Everyone has a weakness. Everyone has something that they have to improve upon. But that, I think that's the primary thing for Justin Fields is getting from that first to second read. The second thing is he likes to see his receivers open before he throws the ball, and instead of anticipating throws. So he's going to have to improve in that area. But if 3-4 years from now, if you tell me that Justin Fields, depending on the situation that he's placed in, is the best quarterback in this class, it won't shock me because he has everything that you look for physically, and he's smart, and he is a hard worker. So I think he'll continue to develop his game.
Am I out of school by saying this feels like a Josh Allen thing where Josh Allen is a big mobile quarterback? Now, the one thing is Fields is more accurate than Josh Allen was out of college, right?
Yep.
And then this just takes time and being in the right place with the right type of coaching, and then you could see Fields kind of jumping over whoever's drafted in front of him the same way we saw with Josh Allen jumping over because Sam Darnold just went to a crappy situation.
Yeah.
And you're not getting the right coaching, the right fundamentals, the right protection. You can't blossom. Could you see something like that if Fields does slide a little bit and is in a better situation like Carolina compared to Zach Wilson, who's with the Jets? And again, apples to oranges, I'm just saying, like, prospect-wise.
Absolutely. That's the hardest part about this whole process is figure you can evaluate them. And I've watched every throw from all these quarterbacks. I think there are 13 quarterbacks that I've literally studied every single throw. But what I don't know is where they're going to go, who the head coach is, who's the offensive coordinator, who's the quarterback coach, who's the running back and the receivers and the offensive line. You know, Josh Allen's a good example. I mean, he had a great defense, and they put pieces around him, and they have a very good coaching staff. Justin Herbert's another one. The Chargers, mm-hmm. I wasn't sure about Justin Herbert because he played in an offense with Mario Cristobal is a former offensive lineman. It was all run game, physical, and there was a lot of talk about, and I've witnessed it, that he was not like the alpha dog. You know, he was kind of not a great leader, a little bit shy. And then he gets to the Chargers, and you see what he's done and how he's developed and how he's blossomed in that system and the way he won late in the season. So it's all about where they wind up going. And you just hope that that all of these guys get a chance. But history tells us two or three of these five quarterbacks that we're talking about in the first round are not going to pan out. And they're mm-hmm. going to wind up – and the second contract is probably going to be with a different team. So so much is based on what's around them and what the coaching situation and the structure of the organization is.
And with that, let's go to the third pick, especially when you see the setup, you see the head coach in Kyle Shanahan, and you see the pieces that are around that team. And whatever quarterback that lands at three is going to be set up so well compared yes. to everybody else, right? And that brings up the Mac Jones conversation here. Are you surprised about the jump he has made? I mean, listen, no one was talking about Mac Jones in November, December, potentially being the third quarterback and maybe the third overall pick in this draft. This is quite a jump from where he was at the start of the season and to where we are right now in April.
Huge jump. It's, you know, it's very similar to Joe Burrow a year ago. And the numbers are very similar, if not better, when you look at Mac Jones and what he did this past year. I'll be honest, when San Francisco moved from 12 up to 3, my first inclination was it's going to be Trey Lance. I think Kyle Shanahan, he looked back at the Super Bowls. He lost one with Matt Ryan, who couldn't avoid that sack late in the game. They got out of field goal position, right? And then he lost another one going up against Pat Mahomes in that tremendous second half that he had in that game. So the mobility, I think, would be intriguing with Kyle Shanahan, who's had, you know, Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins for a very brief bit. He's never had that mobility and a guy who can make plays outside of the script, right? But everything I'm told, all the intel I get, is that Mac Jones could be the guy at number three. And the reason is, and you go back, you just mentioned the story. Last year, he steps in when Tua Tagovailoa gets injured. And the biggest rivalry in all of college football, the Iron Bowl against Auburn, he throws two pick sixes early in that game. But he battles his team back. And if you study that tape, he had him in position. They could have kicked a field goal late to tie the game and go to overtime. It just shows kind of the mental toughness that he has. He could have transferred like every other quarterback. Sitting behind Tua, I'm going to transfer. Put me in the portal. I'm going to go somewhere else. He didn't do it. He hung around. Then they bring in Bryce Young, who's a five-star freshman, who was supposed to be the starting quarterback, and everyone in Tuscaloosa thought, all right, this is Bryce's time. He's going to come in as a true freshman. And he, as Steve Sarkisian, the former offensive coordinator, said, he refused to relent that position. Like he absolutely demanded to have that position. He would never let Bryce take a first snap. He was always the first one out there. He worked through it. And then you see the progression. And I talked to Steve early in the season. We had the Missouri game. I'll never forget. He said, when I asked him about Mac, I said, you know, tell me a little bit about him. I haven't seen a whole lot. He said, we just need him to stay in his lane. We got two receivers, and Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle are going to be first-round picks. We got three offensive linemen that are going to be early draft picks. We've got Najee Harris at running back who's going to be a first-round pick. He just needs to stay in his lane. Then we had a game about 3 or 4 weeks later with Alabama, and Steve was saying, you know, he's really starting to come along. He's progressing. We're giving him more and more. And then late in the season, Steve said to me, I've never given a college quarterback, in all my years of coaching college quarterbacks, I've never given more to a college quarterback than I've given to Mac Jones in terms of the installs and the offense and the freedom that he has at the offensive line. And that's what teams are intrigued by. This guy, he can't beat you with his feet. but he's really good in the pocket. He's got great accuracy, and he's probably the most, I don't want to say intelligent, but probably the fastest processor in terms of going from first read to second read to third read of any of the quarterbacks in this draft class.
Wow. That is high praise, no doubt. And if you're part of the Shanahan scheme in that offense, you are honestly in the right position moving forward. And who knows what they're going to do with Jimmy Garoppolo, whoever they draft at three. Who knows what the future is going to be like, at least in that first year, with Jimmy Garoppolo potentially still being on the roster. We'll see how that plays out. That's for a different day. We will talk about other prospects. I do want to get the conversation outside the quarterbacks, but I want to bring this up too as well, because we have been so, the network, and I think everybody around that's covering the draft, the five quarterbacks, that has been the most dominating conversation. But when you look at day two picks here, and Kyle Trask, and I'm bringing this up because I'm bringing up teams that need quarterbacks that are not going to be able to move up, like potentially if the Patriots don't move up, if the Panthers do strike out, or like the Bears strike out, right, sitting where they're sitting at 20. The Kyle Trask, the Mons of the world, the Jamie Newmans of the world. What are your thoughts about the day two quarterbacks? Is there one guy we should keep an eye on? Because I come back to Kellen Mond and I'm like, no one's talking about him, and I think somebody could get a steal later on.
Yeah, Kellen Mond made a lot of improvement over his career, and I think being with Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M really helped him. This past year, I saw better decision-making and a little bit more consistency with his accuracy. And then after the season, he goes to the Senior Bowl, and he wins I think he threw two or three touchdown passes in the second half of the Senior Bowl and wins the MVP of the Senior Bowl. And Justin Herbert was the MVP a year ago, and you saw what he's been able to do. So I think physically he has everything. Consistency with his accuracy and decision-making is, again, improved, but it needs to advance. But if you're talking about a second-round pick after you've taken someone in the first round, and it, like you said, Chicago, Washington's another team that could want to develop a quarterback with Ryan Fitzpatrick there, probably just for, two, 3 years at the most. I think Mond would be the next best quarterback. I've got him as the sixth quarterback and the first one off the board on day two. Kyle Trask is intriguing. He's a little bit like Mac Jones, right? He spent in high school. This is unbelievable. 7 years, high school, and his first, I think, 3 years at Florida as a backup. And I was on the field as a field analyst that day against Kentucky when Felipe Franks got injured. And Trask comes in, and I'm like, who is this guy? I don't know anything about him. Nothing. He's never played in high school. He's never, he's taken a few garbage snaps in late in games at college, but he's never started a game. And he comes in, and all of a sudden, the tempo of the offense picks up. He's distributing the ball. Again, he's not a runner like some of the other, the first four quarterbacks that I have ranked. But he is smart inside the pocket. He's tough. He'll hang in there and stare down the gun barrel, and he's really accurate throwing the ball. And he trusts his receivers. If you watch a lot of Kyle Pitts or Kadarius Toney, first-round prospects in this class at tight end, wide receiver, respectively, he gave them opportunities to go up and make plays, especially Pitts. And Pitts took advantage. And I think that that's one of the qualities that makes him intriguing as a potential second-round pick.
And also, his head coach, and you've talked about this extensively in the past as well, is Dan Mullen, who knows and understands the offense and the quarterback play. And Mullen does a really good job of changing his system to the style of quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I thought he did a phenomenal job in adjusting to Trask's talents and taking advantage of that instead of saying, we're a running team here with Felipe where we like to move around a little bit more. But he didn't do that, and he took advantage of that. So, I look forward to actually day two. I think that's going to be a huge storyline on the second tier, I should say the second round quarterbacks that are going to be selected. Now, let's go to specifically the talent in this draft, especially when you look at the top 10. It is loaded with offensive playmakers. Then you start to get in that cornerback conversation. And then you have a couple of offensive linemen, a couple of defensive linemen here. Is there one guy that you think is no doubt a Hall of Fame type of talent? Because it feels like every year we average at least one Hall of Famer, right? Is there one guy in this draft you're like, I don't care what position he's going to play. I don't care where he's going to go. He's got the talent to be the Hall of Fame player.
Give me Kyle Pitts, man. I mean, you don't see many 6'5", 245-pounders that run in the 4.4s and can separate, can get off of the press. Kyle Pitts, you can play him in line. He's not a great blocker, but he'll give you effort, which I appreciate. You can flex him out in the slot. You can put him out wide, and he's going to create a mismatch. And you can't cover this guy one-on-one. You've got to bracket him. You've got to have a safety over the top. And even when you do, his ability at 245 pounds, and he'll only get bigger and stronger, but his ability to get in and out of breaks is, it's like watching a Jamar Chase or a Devontae Smith. You know, he's a wide receiver in a bigger body. So now you got a guy who can separate, he can get off the press, and then you've got a guy who can shield you as a big body guy who can go up and get the ball and contested catches. So, he does it all. I think we've seen in the league, like, if you have a special player at tight end, whether it's Rob Gronkowski, Kelsey with Kansas City, I mean, if you have one of these players, he can change everything for you because he's going to be able to create mismatches and then take players out of the box, throw to the opposite side to your other receivers, run the ball. You just have so many opportunities when you get a special player like Pitts. And I think he's going to be one of the premier players in the NFL. And I think when it's all said and done, he's got a chance to be a Hall of Famer.
Oh, that's high praise, and he's a freak show. he's the evolution of football.
You watch all the games, Kevin. I mean, every single time the ball is up in the air, he just goes and gets it.
Yep. No matter what, no matter how many hands are around him, because we saw him many times, double and triple team, and it did not matter because he catches the ball at its highest point. So there's a lot of layers here, and I want to get your thoughts as you shift this whole thing from a player evaluation to team evaluation, and specifically a team like the Patriots and what they're coming off of the season that they had last year and trying to turn things around. How do you view the Patriots sitting at 15 and what their goals are? Because it feels like everything that we know about the Patriots and Bill Belichick, throw it out the door. Because especially how they approach free agency, right? It was nothing we expected or saw before in the last 20 years. So I don't anticipate that they're going to follow a formula that we're used to seeing in this draft in the past. What do you expect them to do at 15? Do you expect them to move up?
I always expect the unexpected with Bill. You know, Bill Belichick, like every time I think I have a beat on what he's going to do, he does something different. And almost always it's successful. So, they backed up the truck. I mean, they backed it up for the two tight ends, wide receivers, defensive back help. I still think that the quarterback is the number one need. And Cam Newton could have a really good year this year because you got to remember, he had COVID. He didn't have time to spend, one-on-one and in person with the coaching staff last year. And I do think that there's talent there. And now you bring – some weapons around him and he's got a chance to succeed, but they're paying him pretty close to backup money. And I have to believe that they are still in search of the future of the quarterback position. Maybe not this year, but maybe, 2 years down the road. So we've gone 20 something years with Bill Belichick and he hasn't drafted a quarterback in the first round. And everyone points to that. And I get it. And I was the first one to sell our graphics team on like, we got to put up a graphic of, second round with Garoppolo and third round with Brissett and sixth round with Brady and everyone else in between. But they also had Tom Brady for about 20 years, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't need to draft a quarterback in the first round if you have Tom Brady and he's playing at a very high level. So I think more so than ever that New England is in a position and has put themselves in this position to go trade up and get a quarterback. Now, I don't know that they're going to do it. I know it's not what they've done in the past, but if you're looking at five quarterbacks in this draft that are going to be first rounders, and you know the first three are coming off the board, 1, 2, 3, there are two other spots. Atlanta's at 4, Carolina's at 8, Denver's at 9. What are you going to do, New England? They're sitting at 15. Are you going to package picks and go get the guy, or are you just going to sit back and take, Patrick Surtain, the corner from Alabama, or J.C. Horn, the corner from South Carolina, or, whatever position you want at that spot. I think that this is a year that they've kind of put it all together so that Cam could have success, but then they draft a quarterback that can be the future.
You brought up wide receivers, and I want to come back to that because it feels like the cornerbacks, it's a three cornerback first round. This yep. wide receiver thing feels like it's a three wide receiver first round, but then in the 20s we could see, you know, Kadarius Toney or Elijah yep. Moore. Am I missing like Terrace Marshall? Like, help us understand the rankings. Is it Jamar, Devontae, Jalen, and then the drop here to the 20s, and then we're looking at some playmakers on the field? Give us that quick breakdown.
Yeah, it's basically tiered. I think Jamar's number one. And listen, I got caught up in Devontae Smith and what he did this past year, and there's nothing more intriguing or fun that I have as a sideline analyst than watching Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, even a year before with Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy. They go sit in that back bench and they chirp at each other. They yell at each other. They're coming off the field and telling Sarkisian, hey, this is what the defense is doing. This is how we have to adjust. Especially Devontae Smith. But and Waddle is so explosive too after the catch. But Devontae Smith is like having a 10-year NFL veteran at wide receiver with the information that he has and processes. But I think it's Jamar Chase. Like I said, I had to go back to 2019 to really study it to kind of see the difference. Devontae is Marvin Harrison. Mm-hmm. And you love that Marvin Harrison. But Jamar Chase is bigger, stronger, more physical, and probably faster. So he's going to be a special player. If he doesn't go four to Atlanta, he's going to go five to Cincinnati. And if he doesn't go five to Cincinnati, he'll go six to Detroit. So he's going to come off the board quickly. But the top tier is Chase, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle. Then there's a little bit of a drop-off. Kadarius Toney, who you talked about, he's not a polished route runner, but he's a weapon. I don't want to say he's Tyreek Hill because there's only one Tyreek Hill, but he's kind of that type of weapon in terms of reverses, screen game, quick game, just get him the ball and let him go make plays. Then there's a little bit more of a drop-off, I think, but there's still a lot of talent. You mentioned Terrace Marshall from LSU, 6'4", 200 pounds. And I haven't seen many guys who are that big and long-levered, if you will, accelerate the way he does off the line. He's not great in and out of breaks, but if you want a vertical outside receiver, Marshall's your guy. Then you got some slot guys, Rondale Moore from Purdue, who ran, I think, a 4.35 in his 40-yard dash, and he's so explosive after the catch and can help in the return game. Elijah Moore ran a 4.29, I think. I mean, these mm-hmm. numbers that we're getting from Pro Days are ridiculous. But coming out of Ole Miss, he's another slot receiver. Tutu Atwell, he has rare quickness and speed, like the combination of getting in and out of breaks, but also vertical speed. So those are the next four guys, Marshall being the X receiver, the outside guy, and then Moore, and Atwell being the slot receivers. Yeah.
Love it. You know, honestly, I think Tutu is one of those sneaky guys on day two because he didn't get all the fanfare, and that offense, you know, was so erratic at Louisville where some days it'd be like phenomenal, and then some days you'd be like, just when you watch the tape, he's the one guy that stands out. That offense. All right, real quick here too. Micah Parsons, especially in a day and age where we mention the middle of the field, the slot wide receivers and the tight ends and covering running backs out of the backfield. This guy is a freak show. And I know he sat out a year, but like when it comes to linebackers and everybody talks about what Devin White did against the Buccaneers.
Yep.
I feel like he's maybe a step better than Devin White. And that he can make an immediate impact and stay on the field for all three downs. How do you view a guy like Micah Parsons right now in a draft like this?
He's not as developed as Devin White was coming out of school, but he's more talented. I'll say that very clear. I mean, he's 6'3", 246 pounds. He ran a 4.38 at his pro day. I mean, I can't even think of a guy. if a linebacker runs in the 4.5, you're like, wow, that's amazing. He ran a 4.38, Kev. I mean, like, it's unbelievable. And I've stood next to him and talked to him. His arms are down, like, below his knees. He's got length. He can play sideline to sideline. He can cover. And the most underrated aspect of his game is his ability to rush the quarterback. I mean, he can get home as a pass rusher. So, Ryan Shazier, you know, before his injury, in the first three seasons, he had I think 17 sacks. He kind of reminds me of Ryan in terms of like the athleticism and the ability to cover, but also then can add that extra element as a pass rusher. So I think I have him as the highest rated defensive player in this draft. And I know we're talking about the quarterbacks, the four pass catchers, including Kyle Pitts at the tight end position in the top 9, 10, 11 spots. But when you get to defensive players, it's Patrick Surtain, J.C. Horn, and Micah Parsons. I've got ahead of those guys in terms of defensive players. And I also think Nick Bolton from Missouri is a stud as an off-the-ball linebacker. Jamin Davis from Florida, another stud, who ran in the 4.3s as well at his pro day. And you got three guys that I believe belong in the first round. They may not all three get in the first round because it's an off-the-ball linebacker and it's not a position of priority. But these guys are big-time playmakers.
Yeah, and you're bringing up steals. And steals where everybody has the conversation of the top 12, the top 15. But this is where you can find some of the gold, right? A little bit later in that first round, at 22 or 23, and you grab a guy and then eventually you plug and play and he's good there for the next 6 to 8 years. All right, we're going to wrap this up here, Todd. But before we let you go, a year ago we had you on the podcast, and this is literally right before it was announced that you were dealing with COVID. And you had to miss the draft. And I know there were two things. First off, more importantly here, COVID hit you hard. It hit you really, really hard. I know physically and emotionally and mentally, you went through a lot. And then to combine that this is your time of year, and then you have to sit out. You don't have the energy or the strength to cover something like this. What's this year mean for you, this month, this draft? What does it mean to be back in action and be a part of it again?
Yeah, it means everything, man. It really does. I mean, I was in the hospital for 5 days. And I couldn't even get myself to, I had a remote control and a TV in front of me. I couldn't even bring myself to watch the draft because it was the first, I've been doing this for 20 years. I think at ESPN for 16 years, leading up to last year's draft. And I finally was allowed to be on the first night on the set. Yep. I was going to be with Herb Street, Reese Davis, and Dez Howard, and I couldn't do it. And I watched the draft on Sunday after. That's how I just emotionally, I couldn't do it. I couldn't bring myself to do it, and I was so exhausted. But I've never worked harder on a draft class than this year. I'm telling when I got healthy, I watched more players in the summer than I've ever watched before. I've been so determined to make this the special year, and it'll be the first time in 20 plus years that I'm going to actually be on the first set again with Herb Street and Dez and Reese Davis, and I can't tell you, it's hard to explain in words how excited I am to be there that night.
Well deserved, man. Cannot wait. That's the College Game Day version. That's going to be on ABC, right? Yep. At 7 o'clock on April 29th, and I can't wait to watch it. I'll be doing the radio side, but we will have you guys on watching the draft. And I appreciate the time here on the College Football Podcast. And most importantly, it's good to see you back and healthy.
I appreciate it, brother. Thanks, man.
All right, that will do it here for our first podcast in April, getting ready for the NFL draft. Of course, big thanks to Todd McShay. Always great to have his opinion. And how about that he's never concentrated and focused more on a draft prep than this year. And I'm sure he's going to be great at the end of the month on April 29th. The simulcast that we're doing, of course, ABC has the College Game Day version. ESPN has its normal version. Looking forward to those two perspectives. And if you're on the go and in the car, you can listen to L. Duncan and myself co-hosting the NFL draft days 1 and 2. Special thanks to Taylor Schwenk, of course, our producer who puts this all together for us each and every week for you. We have more coverage of the draft coming up in the next few weeks. Each week we'll have something, whether it's an analyst or a prospect joining us with their thoughts leading up to the big 3 days with the NFL draft on ESPN as well as ABC. Until then, I hope you guys stay safe and that you guys can enjoy the spring and the beautiful weather outside.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.